Well, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thank you very much for tuning in. Welcome to, almost said welcome to Monday night. I guess it's Tuesday night, right? We just took the night off last night. A couple of people said, hope you're feeling better. Were we feeling bad? We were? Oh, okay. I didn't know what kind of a story we put out for last night. I got an email this afternoon from Greg in east of Toledo, and it's probably a pretty good item to start tonight's program with. Greg writes, I'm watching the Democracy Now! Program. This is Tuesday, August 3rd, and hearing one government spokesman after another condemning the WikiLeaks founder and editor to all sorts of punishment for risking the lives of our troops in Afghanistan and the lives of Afghan families who aided us in our noble attempt to rid the country of all those big, bad terrorists. These U.S. hypocrites are oozing with outrage that this non-American, this WikiLeaks founder, could get away with messing with our great mission in this troubled part of the world. Here's where I'll need lots of help getting this picture into focus. Rewind to the collateral murder video, a U.S. Apache helicopter gunning down men in the suburbs of Baghdad in broad daylight, including two Reuters newsmen. They apparently felt no threat from the aircraft and casually gathered in the square to discuss the news report that they wanted to make to expose some grievance that the residents had in this part of the city. But they were mercilessly gunned down with high-powered weapons, and a lone survivor whose lifeblood had to be pouring out of him was scooped up off the sidewalks and into a van by a brave Good Samaritan, risking his own life and the life of his family in the vehicle. He and his loved ones were summarily gunned down while the shooters giggled with glee from their safe vantage point. Horrendously, two children in the rescue van were struck. Mike, did I hear any outrage expressed by these same aforementioned pseudo-patriots? I know that you struggle with any concept of a God, but if perchance there is one out there, I sure as hell hope that he or she will have mercy on this poor lost nation of ours. Lest this madness is dealt with by we the people, there will be some serious dues to pay. Greg, east of Toledo. Well, no, there is no God. I don't think there's even any reason to entertain an idea that there might be justice. I'm beginning to think there is no justice either. But the Greg is right. The madness, the insanity, and there's no better word for it, of American politicians condemning the release of these reports, 92,000 reports regarding what we have done in Afghanistan. And as everybody, I think, who is in a position to know has agreed, there is no big revelation in these reports. This is not like finding out that the Gulf of Tonkin resolution was a lie. This is not like finding out that Robert McNamara, Secretary of War for Johnson, was lying through his teeth. Now, the documents released by WikiLeaks, or through WikiLeaks, simply indicate what Hannah Arendt talked about a long time ago in writing about oh, what the hell was the guy's name? And she referred to the banality of evil. The banality of evil. And I don't care how anyone wants to spin what we have done in both Iraq and Afghanistan. But in both instances, what the United States government has ordered done has been evil. Using the definitions that religious people use, I frankly don't think there is any such thing as good or evil. There are acts, there are events, there are circumstances, and they are not inherently one or the other. We can ascribe whatever flavor we want. But our activities in both of these countries, using the definitions supplied to us by religious nutcases in three or four of the world's great religions, with quotes around the word great, would indicate that, in fact, what we've done in Iraq and Afghanistan is evil. I defy anyone to say, no, it's not, when you understand that we practice indiscriminate killing of civilians, including children, non-combatants. And again, this is not like World War II, where the really crazy people in our society could justify the firebombing of Dresden, for example, by saying, well, you know, the Nazis attacked us. They didn't, but I mean, that could be the justification. That has been the justification. That was the justification for dropping nuclear bombs on Japan. But in the instance of Afghanistan and Iraq, that kind of warped reasoning can't be used. The Afghans did nothing to us. The Iraqis did nothing to us. So, to have American pundits or policymakers or whoever the hell is making all the comments, and I discount what the fanatical right wing is saying in this country. The fanatical right wing in this country is about as relevant to this country as, I don't know, blisters and boils. They may take over this country. And I guess that would give them relevancy. But I mean, in the great scheme of things, the right wing panderers are useless. The Democrats in positions of power who are heaping abuse on the release of these documents, or the fact that Julian Assange put them out there in WikiLeaks, the Democrats who are coming up with this abuse should know better. They are simply trying to remain in office. So, the fact that politicians and pundits and war lovers across the country are screaming about Julian Assange, but saying nothing about the murder of innocents speaks volumes. It says a lot more than you and I ever could about the awful, ugly hypocrisy and quality of evil of these people. We'll be back. Cheers.
streets I used to own.
It is 21 past the hour. The community, the Muslim community in Manhattan that has been seeking to build a Muslim center and mosque two blocks from Ground Zero overcame what should be their final hurdle today. New York City's Landmark Preservation Commission had been asked to grant historic protection to the building in Lower Manhattan, where the $100 million center would be built, and the commission turned it down. They said, no, we're not, by unanimous vote, we're not going to grant historic protection to a building in order to interfere with the building of this Islamic center. One by one, according to the report that I have, one by one, members of the commission debated the aesthetic significance of the building, which is designed in the Italian Renaissance Palazzo style. And Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, later in the day, he, by the way, has forcefully defended the mosque. He praised the Landmark Commission's vote. He said, quote, to cave to popular sentiment would be to hand a victory to the terrorists, end quote. After the commission voted, several members in the audience for this vote shouted, shame on you and disgrace. One woman carried a sign reading, don't glorify murders of 3,000. No 9/11 victory mosque. Now, the right-wing politicians, of course, as you can well imagine, have been using this to a fairly well. The psychopath Glenn Beck, and who is, will soon be blind, and the already deaf Rush Limbaugh have also been beating this to death. The Anti-Defamation League, the Jewish organization, unexpectedly got into this debate on Friday and said it opposed the project. And asked about the decision by the Anti-Defamation League, Mayor Bloomberg, who is Jewish, called it totally out of character with its stated Michigan, or with its stated mission. Michigan? Mission. And by the way, the stated mission of the ADL, of course, is to work against bigotry, no matter where. It was founded after, the ADL was founded after a horrendous crime here in Georgia. Back in the early 20th century, when Leo Frank was hanged by a lynch mob after being convicted of the murder of Mary Fagan. A girl who worked in the Frank family's pencil factory in downtown Atlanta. Subsequent testimony proved, and testimony during the trial more or less proved, that he was innocent of the crime of rape and murder. That, in fact, another employee who was on the premises at the time, an African-American man, was, in fact, guilty of the crime. Leo Frank was sentenced to death. His death sentence was commuted. A white lynch mob descended on the jail, took him from the jail, and hanged him in the town square in Marietta, Georgia. As a result of that, the Anti-Defamation League was founded. And the ADL has in the past been a great defender of diversity and human rights. Rabbi Michael Lerner of the Tikkun magazine is very upset with ADL He says the Anti-Defamation League publicly opposes the construction two blocks from Ground Zero of the Cordoba House, also known as Park 51, which the planners imagine as hosting a range of activities similar to those offered at the 92nd Street Y, and including a mosque at which Muslims could worship. The plan, supported by Mayor Bloomberg, is opposed by some who have consistently used the attack on the World Trade Center as justification for war and fear and hatred of Muslims. ADL leader Abe Foxman presented the position of this organization that claims to oppose discrimination by reading a formal statement that seemed to be a perfect example of, quote, shooting and crying, end quote. First you attack brutally, then you cry aloud how sad it is to be put in this difficult position, often blaming the victims for having forced us to attack them. The key to the ADL statement is this, and I'll share that with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It's ready. You gotta move.
A liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. So Rabbi Michael Lerner, writing at tikkun.org, has some comments about the ADL opposing the construction of this mosque and Islamic Center two blocks from Ground Zero. ADL leader Abe Foxman puts it this way, quote, proponents of the Islamic Center may have every right to build at this site and may even have chosen the site to send a positive message about Islam. The bigotry some have expressed in attacking them is unfair and wrong. But ultimately, this is not a question of rights, but a question of what is right. In our judgment, building an Islamic center in the shadow of the World Trade Center will cause some victims more pain, unnecessarily, and that is not right. End quote. So, Michael Lerner responds to that by saying this kind of argument is deeply mistaken. It was not Muslims or Islam that attacked the World Trade Center, but some Muslims who held extreme versions of Islam and twisted what is a holy and peace-oriented tradition to justify their acts and their hatred. We see the same thing happening in the name of Christianity. Many of those who justified the war in Iraq were Christians who felt they were acting from a Christian ethical perspective. Or in the name of Judaism, the immoral behavior of some of the settlers who used Judaism as their cover for stealing land and destroying the olive trees of their Palestinian neighbors. Just as we would rebel against others dismissing Judaism or Christianity, or prohibiting Jews and Muslims from constructing our holy places of worship, or community centers where we wish, because some of those who had suffered from the immorality of some Jews or some Christians had decided that it was painful to them to see the presence of these institutions near the site of previous suffering. So we reject this claim. Arthur Waskow asked us to imagine how we would feel if some group of Muslims in the U.S., identifying with the suffering of Palestinians, and including with them some who had lived in Israel and had to leave to protect themselves from the oppression of occupation that they labeled as Jewish oppression, had opposed the construction of a synagogue in their predominantly Muslim neighborhood because it would cause some of the victims of Israeli policy to experience more pain. Would we accept that? Certainly not. Underlying the ADL position is its reference to the Holocaust and the need to respect the feelings of its survivors. Sadly, the memory of Jewish suffering is appropriated by right-wing forces to justify special privilege for Jews in general and Israel in particular. Now is to be extended to victims of 9/11, that privilege. But not, it will not be extended, for example, to the survivors of U.S. military assaults on civilians in Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, El Salvador, Haiti, Dominican Republic, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Iraq, or Afghanistan. The aggression of others is always evil. Ours is always justifiable to the political right. That's bad enough, but shame on the Anti-Defamation League in particular for now using our suffering in the Holocaust to justify discrimination toward others, whether in Israel or in the U.S. And the statement goes on. You can find it at tikkun.org, T-I-K-K-U-N.org. Rabbi Michael Lerner, who is the editor of that magazine. So it is a done deal now, and now we will sit back and listen to the howling and the screeching and the screaming of these right-wing maniacs who control damn near everything in this country. Why is there never any protest about building a Christian center? I mean, the Christian nutcases in this country insist we are a Christian nation. There's no debate to them. And they also insist that in the name of their Christ or their Christian or their God, it is perfectly okay to slaughter millions. The hypocrisy is almost too much to bear, isn't it? Prairie 2 sends me this. It's officially worse than we thought, but we know how to turn free enterprise loose. He writes, if you thought the recession has been worse than we were told, you're right. The Commerce Department has revised the GDP figures all the way back to 2007. And all the numbers set new records, the bad kind. There is no question that we haven't seen numbers like this since the last Republican Great Depression. The worst drop in consumer spending took place last year, falling twice as much as previously thought. This was the worst drop seen since 1942, which was the first full year of World War II when the production of all consumer goods was halted completely. FDR didn't tell everybody to go shopping after his 9/11. Another fact is that the entire 4 years of the biggest war ever with 12 million Americans in uniform costs roughly $1 trillion in today's dollars. Bush's war has cost more than that so far. The greatest generation had a different sort of government in Washington back then. And back then, making a profit from the war was a crime, and people went to prison. There were no contractors in the war zone funneling money into Swiss bank accounts. Conservatives trying to kill the stimulus bill will tell you that the Depression didn't end until World War II because the New Deal was killing the economy, and the war turned free enterprise loose! Of course they say this as if it were a fact and count on nobody remembering what the war was like. There was absolutely no free enterprise during the war, with everything either contracted to the government or severely rationed. And war profits were forbidden by law. Talk about socialism. There is a reason the Republicans called it Roosevelt's war. They had wanted to be on the other side where they had invested their money. And they weren't making any money here. In short, World War II was run like the New Deal on steroids, and FDR was able to do things he couldn't before to stabilize the economy. He set commodity prices across the board. Farmers and small businesses never had it so good. Anybody could get a job, and every business could get a government contract. FDR engaged in Soviet-style central planning and clamped down with unprecedented government regulation on everything. We could get out of our current depression with similar wartime measures if we wanted to, since that's what conservatives want. FDR was also reelected to a fourth term during the war. He did, however, live with an unheard-of level of security, traveling in armored train cars, and he fortified the White House. FDR maintained strict secrecy surrounding his movements. But it probably wasn't foreign assassins he was really worried about. PrairieNumeral2.com. No, the effort to overthrow the government of FDR, the effort to kill him and join up with Adolf Hitler was was the goal of the equivalent of the teabaggers today, the equivalent back then in the 30s and 40s. That's exactly what they wanted, the big industrialists. They wanted nothing to do with Jews. As a matter of fact, several prominent industrialists in this country had written screeds about the terrible Jew. I mentioned this before. There were many prominent Americans in this country who insisted that the United States, the UK, and Germany should sign a pact and make war on the rest of the world. And in the process, get rid of all the Jews, get rid of the Slavs, get rid of the yellow hordes in the East. This was the goal of Henry Ford and Pierre DuPont and Charles Lindbergh. And I mean, just right down the list. So, yeah, the American right wing during World War II, as Prairie 2 points out, always considered us to be on the wrong side. We were supposed to have been on the side of the Germans, the Nazis. Robert Frank, who I'm sure you're familiar with his book, what is it? What's the matter with America? No, what's the matter with... What's the matter with Kansas? Is that it? He had a column in the Wall Street Journal today that I think you're going to like. Stay with us, I'm Mike Malloy.
Why did they all come out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died? The world is riddled with maggots. The maggots are getting fat. They're making a tasty meal of all the bosses and bureaucrats. They're taking over the boardrooms and they're battling for the pride. And they all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died. So if you meet with these historians, I'll tell you what to say. Tell them that the Nazis never really went away. They're out there burning houses down and peddling racist lies. And we'll never rest again until every...
See the life I've had.
Radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly
10 before the hour.
Real, but it ain't exactly
I think I'm gonna let that wait until after the top of the hour. According to Haaretz newspaper, the imam of the mosque, the Islamic Center to be built near Ground Zero, Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, thanked today the American Jewish supporters who backed the proposed center amid a widespread controversy. This is what the imam said, quote, "I express my heartfelt appreciation the gestures of goodwill and support from our Jewish friends and colleagues. Your support is a reflection of the great history of mutual cooperation and understanding that Jewish and Muslim civilizations have shared in the past. It remains a testament to the enduring success of our continuing dialogue and dedication to upholding religious freedom, tolerance, and cooperation among us all as Americans. Yeah. And Roz writes, as it happens, the most tolerant of religions must have been Islam. As I recall, during the Ottoman Empire's long reign, they were amicable to Jews and Christians living and working together with Muslims. No prejudice whatsoever. Israel does not extend that courtesy lately, nor do the Christians. I don't think we can ever knock the faith of Islam. Their generosity was exemplary. Of course, I do not include the radical Wahhabists in this. It's really quite sad. And prior to the Ottoman Empire, I mean, just go back to the great Persian Empire. As far as I know, it was the Christians, as they came across Europe in their mighty crusades, the Christians who would stop in villages along the way and just for the hell of it slaughter all the Jews and any Muslims they might find on their way to liberating the Holy Land. I hate religion, all of it. Gordon in Oklahoma City writes, Mike, although the Muslim community has won a major roadblock in building a community center, which includes a mosque, they have yet to raise the money. Yeah, that's right. They're counting on donations. Gordon says, to make things interesting, I hope one of Murdoch's News Corporation partners finances the entire project, that person being Prince Awalid bin Talai of Saudi Arabia. Yeah, he's, I think after the Murdoch family, he's the major shareholder in News Corporation. That would be interesting if the Saudi prince were to, he could fund it with lunch money, his lunch money. Wouldn't that be fun? To see Fox News and its major stockholder, a Saudi prince, fund the building of this Islamic center while all the right-wing wackos in this country who turn to Fox News for their marching orders would be left trying to figure out what the hell to do now. You stupid people. You Fox viewers and Glenn Beck eaters. Oh, you see, Beck inspired somebody else to commit mass murder today. He never stops, does he? Brandt writes, Mike, this distortion of WikiLeaks events is typical of the U.S. military and confirms their role as state-sponsored terrorists. They will reflexively intimidate those who seek human rights and universal justice, exactly as the Nazis did. This is topsy-turvy logic, which is the distinct trademark of lunatic militarists, as historically demonstrated by Hitler's regime, Hitler's extreme monstrous regime, which serves as the exact blueprint for current American militarist policy. They are stupidly exposing themselves now to the world as the duplicitous genocidal agents they are and always will be. May God damn them to eternal hell and suffering for their violence, lies, and hypocrisy. They will get their karma someday, I absolutely believe. Brandt. Well, again, Brandt, I certainly admire the intent of your belief in karma, justice, action, reaction, the invisible whip, whatever you want to call it. But I'm afraid I'll have to pass on that one. Did you know that Ariel Sharon is still alive, and so is Dick Cheney? Did you know that? One of them doesn't have a heartbeat, even though they're both still alive. Sharon is in a permanent vegetative state. Do you know how long it's been? 4.5 years. January 4th, 2006 is when he suffered a massive stroke. And said since then, he's been in a permanent vegetative state. Dick Cheney still has no heartbeat, and his blood continues to roar through the chambers of his heart. You know, I was thinking about that the other day. How did they stop it from pooling in his extremities? I mean, if there's no pump, no pumping action, is it just like a garden hose? It's like when you, when you're cleaning the leaves out of your gutters. Your gutters, right? And you get the garden hose out and stick it up there. Cheney's daughter, the crazy one, says that he's coming home. Yes, indeed. Where they're going to hook him up to, I'll tell you what, they better have, make sure that they have some kind of surge protection in that house. Wherever he's living. Does he still live? No, he doesn't live in the vice president's digs anymore. Without surge protection, one good thunderstorm in the Washington, D.C. area and a power outage, it'll be goodbye, Dick. We'll be right back. Program. It is 7 past the hour. Bob in Miami, referring to the people who wanted us to side with the Nazis. Bob in Miami says, please don't leave out W's grandfather, Prescott Bush, and his father-in-law, George Herbert Walker, when talking about war profiteering and assassination of Roosevelt. Yeah, they were... They were behind a lot of that. And then the great-grandson gets, or the grandson gets to be president of the United States. Jesus, God. If you live in the Seattle area, I hope you are coming to this gig that AM 1090, our affiliate in that city, is putting on Saturday, August 14th at 6 p.m., it is the annual, fifth annual AM 1090 Progressive Forum. Who will be there? Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, Norman Goldman, Randy Rhodes, Mike Malloy, and special guest Ron Reagan, moderated by former Seattle Times chief political reporter David Postman. You can get all the information by going to am1090seattle.com. AM1090Seattle.com. If you're going to be in the Seattle area Saturday, August 14th, come on by. I'd like to meet you, and I'm sure that applies to the rest of the people on the panel. Come by and say howdy. I'll mention that again so you... well, remember it. Why I mentioned Ariel Sharon being in a permanent vegetative state for 4.5 years now. Israeli and Lebanese army troops today exchanged lethal fire on the border between those two countries. This means that the rapture-ready websites are going to go crazy now. All the Christian women are going to get their hair done and their nails done and their teeth cleaned so they can go meet Jesus. Every time Israel gets involved, my God, if Israel was unleash nuclear weapons on Iran, can you imagine? Half of these Christian rapture-ready women would die of massive orgasms. They would just keel over dead. Every capillary and vein in their body would explode from the sheer joy of all that death and the fact that their Savior was on his way. So here we go again. This is the worst clash between Israel's army and the Lebanese Hezbollah militia since the summer of 2006. Lebanon said at least 4 Lebanese were killed. Israel reported that a battalion commander was killed and a platoon commander was critically wounded. Each side blamed the other for the flare-up. A Lebanese army spokesman said the skirmishes started after Israeli soldiers crossed into Lebanese territory to cut down a tree. The spokesman said, quote, "We fired in the air and they responded by firing artillery shells." The Israeli military said its soldiers were fired upon inside Israeli territory, just west of the village of Misgag Am. Israel said that its forces were engaged in routine maintenance work in a gap between the so-called blue line, the internationally recognized border, and its security fence. So, let's see how quickly this will escalate into World War III, or, better yet, the return of the Christian Messiah, who will be so impressed with all the blood and gore and slaughter and corpses that he will come back and start snatching his rapture-ready people as they float up naked to greet him. Oh, my God. God, how do people function believing this kind of obscene nonsense? How do you do that? How do you believe that with enough slaughter and death that this great lover of the human race, God incarnate, is going to return already? I mean, like, he was here once, now he's going to come back. Who believes this? I know. Billions of people. Oh, well. Robert Frank, what's the matter with Kansas? Robert Frank had a piece in the Wall Street Journal. He says, late last year, the U.S. economy experienced a surprising decoupling, a coming apart. I know, you know what that means. As stocks boomed, the wealthy bounced back. Yay! And while the Main Street economy was racked by high unemployment and the real estate crash, the wealthy picked themselves up, brushed themselves off, and started buying luxury goods again. You see, their financial fates are more tied to capital markets than jobs and houses. Who knows what the next few months and years will bring, but one thing seems clear. The economic fate of Richistan, that would be us, seems increasingly or I mean that would be them, seems increasingly separate from the fate of the United States. Some argue that the decoupling has gone even further. Michael Lind, a policy director for the Economic Growth Program at the New American Foundation, argues in Salon Magazine that the American rich no longer need the rest of America. They don't need us anymore. He says the wealthy increasingly earn their fortunes with overseas labor, right? Selling to overseas consumers and managing financial transactions that have little to do with the rest of the United States. He says, quote, a member of the elite can make money from factories in China that sell to consumers in India while relying entirely or almost entirely on immigrant servants at one of the several homes around, one of his several homes around the country, end quote. And Mr. Lind adds, if the American rich increasingly do not depend for their wealth on American workers and American consumers, or for their safety on American soldiers or police officers, then it's hardly surprising that so many of them should be so hostile to paying taxes to support the infrastructure and the social programs that help the majority of the American people. The rich don't need the rest of us anymore. This is why you find, and I completely agree with Lind and with Robert Frank here. This is the reason that there are these well-financed attacks against tax reform or taxing the wealthy or taxing corporations that exist in one form in a P.O. box in the Bahamas and in another form, massive factories all over the so-called third world. These son of a bitches are destroying everything. Frank says, some would argue all this is a vast overstatement. The U.S. remains the largest consumer market in the world and still matters to Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and Lloyd Blankfein. The American wealthy benefit greatly from the country's legal system and business transparency, not to mention its armed forces. More on this when we come back.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies?
Don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. The increasingly global elite do seem to be forming something of their own financial culture, unattached to any single nation or set of rules, and increasingly free to move their money and resources and tax dollars wherever they are treated the best. Rather than having a second home in Richistan, an increasing number of rich people seem to be moving their money there full time. Do you think the rest of America matters anymore to the rich? Hell no. Yeah, this is a very important thing that Robert Frank has written, because that's one of the things we talk about on this program a lot, is how these wealthy predatory bastards, most of whom who have never worked a day in their lives, they twiddle dials and manage a bunch of keystrokes, They deprive people of their homes and their jobs in order to maximize the profit of the filthy corporation they work for. And for doing that, for depriving people of their health care or their home or their job or their automobile or their student loan, for depriving people of an opportunity to stay afloat, stay alive in the sinking dead empire. These people are paid millions and millions and millions of dollars. Why would they want to stay here? Of course, given the kind of money that they make, they can afford to live any place in the United States that they want to. They want to live on top of a mountain. They don't buy a house on top of a mountain. They buy a mountain and build a house. Very simple. They want to live near the ocean. They don't build a house near the ocean. They buy 50 or 60 lots on the ocean and then build a huge, huge mansion. And that part of the ocean becomes theirs. Have I been saying Robert Frank? I mean Thomas Frank. I'm sorry. Robert Frank is a filmmaker, a photographer. I met him. Well, now this says Robert. But it can't be that. It has to be Thomas. Thomas Frank. Thanks, Bill. Yeah, Robert Frank. He's a filmmaker and photographer. He must be 90. Easy. Now, in light of that, the people that live in Richistan in the United States who, you know, you got to think about this for a minute. You know, why should American corporations put anything into the United States any longer? I mean, why? With NAFTA and GATT and all these trade agreements that were signed into law by Bill Clinton and pushed into a signable form by George Herbert Walker Bush, why would American corporations or American wealthy industrialists, and I know that term sounds like, oh my God, that is so 19th century, but it's so very true. Why would they invest anything in the United States? Why would these wealthy folks give a tinker's damn about whether or not the highways are passable, you know, paved? Well, why appropriate money? Have you noticed the median strips in the shoulders of the roads out in the country near your house, all overgrown with weeds? Have you noticed that? Because there's no money left to cut down the weeds. We drove from Atlanta to Hilton Head, South Carolina, Hilton Head Beach, Hilton Head Island, South Carolina last weekend. And on the way down, driving through Georgia and a chunk of South Carolina, highways, interstate highways that are just a mess. Weeds as big as trees, for God's sake, growing. But once we got onto Hilton Head Island, oh my God, not a scrap of trash. Not a single blade of anything higher than the designated half inch, because that's where the wealthy hang out. There are non-wealthy who live on Hilton Head. That's one of the reasons we get to go there, because you can still rent a hotel room. You can rent a condo. But the really wealthy who live there would not allow their little nest to be disturbed by unruly weeds. Whereas on the drive to Hilton Head Island, well, you know what I'm talking about, because it happens in your neck of the woods too, doesn't it? I wonder what the wealthy on Hilton Head Island are going to do the next time a massive hurricane hits there. Well, when I walk in there dreaming like a dog, only hit him in the head with the voodoo law. Republicans, one and all, their tallywhackers are mighty small. Steal from the poor and to give to the rich, gonna make the bank president twitch in a ditch. Oh. I hate banks.
listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
25 before the hour. Anyway, Bob Herbert writing Saturday in the Times. This ties in neatly with what Robert Frank wrote. Yeah, it was Robert. Different Robert Frank for the Wall Street Journal. But Bob Herbert writes, the treatment of workers by American corporations has been worse, far more treacherous than most of the population realizes. There was no need for so many men and women to be forced out of their jobs in the downturn known as the Great Recession. Many of these workers were cashiered for no reason other than outright greed by corporate managers. And that cruel, irresponsible, short-sighted policy has resulted in widespread human suffering and is doing great harm to the economy. Well, yeah, Bob Herbert, you're absolutely correct. And we've talked about this so many times on this program. Corporate America, capitalist America, is incapable of caring a whit. Nothing. There is no investment in this country by corporate America. None. The only reason corporations are still here is because they are still able to manipulate members of Congress, mostly Republican, but also some Democrats, manipulate members of Congress where it concerns tax law, tax shelters, regulatory rules that were put down to protect the American people and have since been gutted and destroyed. That's the only reason they're here. They are not here, capitalist America, corporate America, to provide jobs or funding for schools or baseball teams or retirement packages or health care or anything. Back to Bob Herbert, who writes, he's quoting Andrew Sum, an economics professor and director of the Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University in Boston. Mr. Sum writes, I've never seen anything like this. Not only did they throw all these people off the payrolls, they also cut back on the hours of the people who stayed on the job. End quote. Herbert writes, as Professor Sum studied the data coming in from the recession, he realized that the carnage that occurred in the workplace was out of proportion to the economic hit the corporations were taking. Well, nobody questions the severity of the downturn. The economic data show that workers, to a great extent, were shamefully exploited. And you know what? These stupid sons of bitches will go ahead and vote Republican yet again. Bob Herbert says the recession officially started in December 2007. From the fourth quarter of 2007 to the fourth quarter of 2009, real aggregate output in the U.S. as measured by the gross domestic product fell by 2.5%, but employers cut their payrolls by 6%. In many cases, bosses told panicked workers who were still in the job that they had to take pay cuts or cuts in hours or both. Raises out of the question. The staggering job losses and stagnant wages are central reasons why any real recovery has been so difficult. Professor Sum added, quote, they threw out far more workers in hours than they lost output. Here's what happened, he writes. At the end of the fourth quarter in 2008, you see corporate profits begin to really take off, and they grow by the time you get to the first quarter of 2010 by $572 billion. Profits. Not earnings. Profits. And over that same time period, wage and salary payments go down by $122 billion. That kind of disconnect, Mr. Sum said, had never been seen before in all the decades since World War II. In short, the corporations are making out like bandits. They're sitting on mountains of cash, and they still are not interested in hiring to any significant degree or strengthening workers' paychecks. Productivity tells the story. Increases in the productivity of American workers are supposed to go hand in hand with improvements in their standard of living. That's how capitalism is supposed to work. Sure it is. That's how the economic pie is supposed to expand. Sure it is. And that's how we're all supposed to have a fair share of that expansion. That was then, Bob. This is now. Corporations have now said, Bob Herbert writes, to hell with that. To hell with that. And, you know, I will use the term capitalists, whereas Bob Herbert uses the term corporations. Come on, these decisions are being made by human beings, where corporations have certainly had accrued to them some of the rights of human beings. They still are not. So the capitalists have now said the hell with that. Herbert writes, economists believe the nation may have emerged technically from the recession early in the summer of 2009. That was a year ago. As Professor Sum writes, in a new study for the Labor Market Center, this period of economic recovery, quote, has seen the most lopsided gains in corporate profits relative to real wages and salaries in our history, end quote. Corporate profits are off the chart. American workers, families, men, women are losing everything. Now you tell me, truth seeker, how long will that continue? How long will such disparity continue before the country convulses and the capitalists are tracked down and convinced that they have been unfair? When, in other words, do you think the modern equivalent of the tumbrils turning and the guillotine swishing will start to occur? This can't go on. This can't continue. It cannot. And yet the wealthy, as Robert Frank writes in the Wall Street Journal, they don't need the corporate elites. They don't need this country anymore. They don't need American workers. They have these massive, massive pools of human labor stuck around the globe. Billions of people. Billions. People who will do anything for a bowl of goddamn rice. Or, what does a Vietnamese factory worker get now? $42 a month? A month. So the capitalists are going to bring these jobs home for the sake of America? I think not. Having taken everything for themselves, Bob Herbert writes, the corporations, the capitalists, Mike Malloy parenthetically adds, are so awash in cash, they don't know what to do with it all. Citing a recent article from Bloomberg Businessweek, Professor Sum noted that in July, cash at the nation's non-financial corporations stood at $1.84 trillion. Trillion. A 27% increase over early 2007. That's cash sitting there. Let's have more tax cuts. I see these filthy pig bastard Republicans running around with their hair on fire in the Senate saying, oh, it's going to be a tax increase if we let the Bush tax cuts that so stimulated the economy and does these wonderful things expire. And the American public, because we are the most ignorant conglomeration of fools on earth, we're sitting back. A goodly percentage of us going, yeah, that's right. Well, damn, the rich people got to make more. So a little bit will trickle down. Maybe they'll open the factory. Maybe a plant will reopen. Maybe I'll have a job. No, you're not ever going back to work. Do you not understand that yet? Never. Moody's ratings, or what the hell is Moody's? Everybody knows what it is, and nobody knows what it is. Moody's has pointed out that as a percent of total company assets, cash has reached a level not seen in the past half century. Executives are delighted with this ill-gotten bonanza. Charles McLain Jr., the chief financial officer at Alcoa, which recently experienced a turnaround in profits and a 22% increase in revenue, is an example. As the Times reported this week, Mr. McLain assured investors that his company was in no hurry to bring back 37,000 workers who were let go since 2008. The plan is to minimize rehires wherever and whenever possible, he said, adding, quote, "We're not only holding headcount levels, but are also driving restructuring this quarter that will result in further reductions," end quote. Yeah.
Up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Bob Herbert concludes his column from Saturday by saying there can be no robust recovery as long as corporations are intent. Malloy uses the word capitalists. Corporations are intent on keeping idle workers sidelined and squeezing the pay of those still on the job. It doesn't have to be this way. Germany and Japan, because of a combination of government and corporate policies, suffered far less worker dislocation in the recession than the United States. Until we begin to value our workers and understand the critical importance of employment to a thriving economy, we will continue to see our standards of living decline. That last little bit sounded fairly close to a college lecture. But you get what Herbert was saying. The truth, you never know about the truth. It's a wily thing, isn't it? But the truth seems to be that corporate America is not the least bit interested. Capitalist America is not the least bit interested. Not a whit. Not at all. Not to any degree. In providing the wherewithal for the American workers that ultimately made them the wealthy elites. The ones who didn't get their money from inherited wealth. And why should they? I wonder if in my lifetime, or perhaps yours, the workers of the world will unite. Isn't that what most of us are? Workers? Little worker bees? Worker ants? Brrr, going hither and yon, getting our kids to school, going to a PTA meeting, checking out a movie, going to Target, and waiting for the rapture. But I wonder when the workers of the world will unite. I mean, Marx talked about that. 150 years ago, did he? Workers of the world, unite. Well, the workers of the world did not unite. As a matter of fact, the corporations of the world united. They took a page right out of the Marxist handbook, the capitalists did, and said, whoa, damn, look at this. Woohoo! All right, here's what we have to do. Let's make up something called NAFTA. That'll be the standard around which we unite. Screw the worker. Oh, Carl had it pretty nailed there. He just had the wrong group. Capitalists of the world, unite! And they have. And, of course, the workers of the world, to whom the manifesto was addressed, they're still eating each other. They're still clawing at each other and fighting each other and going berserk and killing each other and fighting the wars for the capitalists who have united. No? You don't think so? Tell me the difference then between a capitalist in Germany, United States, China, Vietnam, Ecuador. What's the difference? The differences, if there are any, are minuscule, whereas the comparisons are endless. So here we are in the United States. $1.1 trillion worth of cash that the capitalists are sitting on, and they're not going to hire. Why should they? Why, in the first place, why pay one American worker $22 an hour when you can get a Vietnamese worker for $42 a month? But even taking it to the next level, why pay 10 American workers $15 an hour when you can squeeze the poor bastards down to the point where you're paying 8 American workers $15 an hour and getting the same amount of productivity? How do you do that? You just apply the pressure. You take the first 5 and fire them, and then you say the remaining 10. Guess what? I don't want to hear the word union. I don't want you even think about bonuses, vacations, or health insurance. Get your ass on the shop floor and work. And production better increase by this percent this month, this percent next month, that percent the following month, because if it does not, then you're gone too. So what's the American worker to do? Unite with the workers of the world? Or just kind of sit back on his sorry or her sorry, tired butt, and just say, man, you know, it never used to be this way. I don't know what happened. My dad used to have a job, and that took care of everything. I don't know what happened. Workers of the world, unite. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. And we are in the final hour of the Malloy program. Interesting email here from John in Raleigh, North Carolina, who writes, Mike, not sure if you can relate, but I've been so depressed and angry or frustrated at all that is going on that I've just turned it all off. And when I stuck my head above ground this past week and I notice it's as nuts as ever. What the hell? I thought. But I'm writing to advocate for the unemployed, the foreclosed, the bankrupt out here in the real country. The ones that pay the taxes so that Congress can have nice salaries, great retirements, great medical care. The taxes that pay for 750 military bases around the world. And all those salaries, medical benefits, and retirement benefits that goes with it. What the unemployed are getting is weekly calls from credit card companies who listen patiently to a person's horror story and then ask, well, Mr. Jones, when do you think you can pay that $700 you're behind? The landlord who forecloses if rent is 2 weeks overdue, or the electric or water company that drive their white trucks out to shut things off and who, when told of the person's circumstances, just tell him to pay the overdue amount and we'll restore service. And oh, the potential employer who gets an application from someone over 35 and tosses it into the trash. This is what the unemployed are getting. Sleepless nights, endless job applications, trying to keep the phone service running, since without that, who can call you for an interview? The unemployed hate the visit our website to fill out a customized job application for that particular company, needing a new password and ID for each company they apply to. The job recruiters who say, send me your resume, and never call back. And the colleges that tell you, okay, at age 45 and up, sure, you can take courses, but who would hire you when you finish your degree? At your age? There are at least three real worlds in America now. One, the middle class as it slides down the wall and is blamed for what has happened. Two, the banks and Wall Street that caused the crash, but who are making money hand over fist, some of it from charging late fees and fees in general. And three, the Washington elite who tut-tut at Main Street while they plan the next war. And there is and has been a fourth world in America. Black America. A group has seen all this stuff, this usury and worse, from slavery forward to today. I know they don't welcome the white working and middle class to their world, but they must see the parallels. I'm not sure the white middle class does yet. And last, let's invoke the force majeure clause for all unemployed and others who have fallen upon hard times through no fault of their own. Let's forgive all debt in these cases and give everyone else a 60% write down on what they owe. This just might incent government and business to worry a little more about the unemployment crisis. After all, state unemployment commissions track each unemployed person's status as a matter of legality. Might not be writing for a while, Mike. Things are changing in my life substantially, and not for the best. I will listen in when I can. John in Raleigh. Thanks, John. I saw this a couple of weeks ago, and I may have already put it on the air. I don't know. It's question to a Tea Party member and everyone else who supports the Republicans. 8 years of Bush and Cheney, and now you're mad? You didn't get mad when the U.S. Supreme Court stopped a legal recount and appointed a president. You didn't get mad when we, in secrecy, allowed energy company officials to dictate energy policy. You didn't get mad when we ignored the clear and timely warning that terrorists were going to hijack planes and fly them into the World Trade Center. You didn't get mad when a covert CIA operative had her cover story or her cover blown simply because of a factual contradiction of Vice President Dick Cheney. You didn't get mad when the Patriot Act got passed. You didn't get mad when we illegally invaded a country that posed no threat to us. You didn't get mad when the weapons inspectors, who said there were no WMDs, were ignored. You didn't get mad when we spent over $600 billion and counting on this illegal war. You didn't get mad when over $10 billion just disappeared in Iraq. You didn't get mad when hundreds of thousands of people died in Iraq. And you didn't get mad when you found out we were torturing people. You didn't get mad when the government was illegally wiretapping Americans. You didn't get mad when we didn't catch Osama bin Laden. You didn't get mad when you saw the horrible conditions at Walter Reed Hospital. You didn't get mad when we let a major U.S. city, New Orleans, drown. And you didn't get mad when we gave a $900 billion tax break to the rich. You didn't get mad when the deficit hit the $1 trillion mark. You didn't get mad when the national debt hit the $10 trillion mark. But you finally got mad when we decided the people in America deserve the right to see a doctor if they are sick. Yeah, illegal wars, lies, corruption, torture, stealing your tax dollars to make the rich richer are all okay with you, but helping other Americans? Oh, hell no. You tried to lead us to believe that teabaggers, Republicans, are simply small government libertarian folk who oppose wasteful spending, want low taxes, and want the government off our backs? However, the litany of transgressions listed above that you supposedly small government libertarian folk did not oppose expose you all as hypocrites. Teabaggers and Republicans are only angry for one or more of the following three reasons. One, a Republican is not president. Two, a Democrat is president. Three, a black man is president. Terry sent that. Thanks, Terry. No, I discount numbers one and two. I think it's number three. The teabagger nation lost its cool and went berserk because a real African American, not to say that black folk in this country are not African American, and that's even a wrong term as far as I'm concerned, but I'm white. What do I know? A Kenyan American is now president of the United States. Yeah, why do we say African American? How many countries make up Africa? 70? 80? I mean, a white person from South Africa, is he an African American? How about an Egyptian? How about somebody from Morocco? And then Hernan in Buenos Aires writes, on Friday, Republicans in the Senate rejected a bill that would ensure aid to the middle class and small businesses by facilitating bank loans, among other things. The funny fact, if you can call it that way, is that this bill applied tax cuts and was co-written by Republicans. Of course, the tax cuts were meant to benefit middle class workers and entrepreneurs, not their ultra-rich buddies. So in short, these days, the Republicans achieved the following. Well, I'll finish up when we come back, because we have to take a quick break.
Well, you better listen, my sisters and brothers, because if you do, you can hear their voices still calling across the years. And they're all crying, ocean.
gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It is 22 past the hour. I guess we should take some phone calls at some point. Not right now. A couple more things. Oh, Hernan, I hadn't finished. In short, these days, the Republican Party achieved the following. One, obstructed a bill to extend unemployment benefits. Two, obstructed a bill to help small businesses with tax cuts. Three, obstructed a bill to help 9/11 responders. Four, obstructed the Disclose Act that would have forced corporations to disclose their sponsorship where it concerns political ads. Five, obstructed the Homeless Women's Veterans Bill that would have supported homeless women. It seems Republicans have killed more Americans with their greedy policies than any military could ever have killed, don't you think? Hernan, Buenos Aires, Argentina. Argentina. And this is interesting. There's a website. Will Dance for Rent. Will Dance for Rent. Blogspot.com. And he writes to me. Looks like I'm a 99er. I'll be homeless in a month. Like so many Americans, I've tried and tried and tried again to get a job since I was laid off the last time in March of 2009. Today I was told I'm a 99er. I was shocked. I was laboring under the assumption that since my state, Oregon, has such a high unemployment rate that I would be included in the latest extension. Today, the Oregon Unemployment Department told me that is not the case. I've exhausted all extensions, and the extra extensions the state put in place ran out of money months ago. Today is my last unemployment check. I started willdanceforrent.blogspot.com thinking it would help me pay my rent, subsidize my unemployment while I look for a new job. I had no idea it would eventually wind up being my sole source of income. I don't know what's going on in this country. They had to virtually pull teeth to renew unemployment last time, and now I find out I don't qualify for it. I will be without the home I've made for myself for 6 years in 1 month. I will have to give up my cat of 13 years in 1 month. My life will be completely different, and I doubt in a good way, in 1 month. All I hear from Congress is deficit this and deficit that. I could give a crap about deficits. I care about having a place to live. That's what I care about. I went to work. I came early and stayed late. I wore the shirt and tie, and what do I have to show for it? No home. I have a pack of 7.5 billion-year-old Senate Republicans calling me lazy and a drug user. Really? What do I know from trade agreements, Bush tax cuts, deficit spending? I don't know about any of that crap. I know that I got paid on Fridays, the unemployment check arrived on Wednesdays, and now nothing. Please go to willdanceforrent.blogspot.com and donate what you can. I have to raise $500 for September's rent so I can end my current lease without an eviction. So when I get back on my feet, I can get a new place downtown. Then I need to start paying for a rented room downtown someplace. I will dance for my rent. I will also be registering to vote. Can you guess who I'll be voting for? Will it be the party who at least tried to get me extended unemployment benefits, however ballessly they went about it? Will it be the party that at least remembers there are people in this country without the letter CEO in their name? Or will it be the party that wants yet bloody more tax cuts for people that are offshoring jobs, not paying corporate taxes, and not reinvesting in the American economy so I can have a decent job? Who do you think I'll be voting for? Thank you very much. willdanceforrent.blogspot.com. I don't know if that one should make me cry or applaud. Mike, I don't want to be picky, but the Pakistani Intelligence Service is not the ISS. They're known as the ISI. I don't care for the most part what you call them. I only bring it up because I don't want you to appear stupid. Keep hammering and give Molly and Kathy a kiss for me. Jeff in PA. There you go.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Dana in Lake St. Louis, Missouri writes, thank you for emphasizing that the jobs are not coming back. The rich and powerful simply make more money hiring in developing countries, and money is all they care about. They're also happy to see most of the world collapse in a heap. It is their hubris that somehow their money will shield them from the mess. I think it's important to stress that job or no job, we can have dignity. Without going into detail, I've been affected by a slow decline in employment prospects for a while. In one way, it's difficult, but it's also been a chance to cut most of my ties to the world of the corporation. I have to cobble together a living and make do with less, and that's hard, but I am freer than I've ever been to be myself and stay out of denial. Maybe the answer is not to hope the jobs come back, but to be glad they will not, so that we can build something better. In colonial America, there were many people who didn't have jobs. They farmed small plots, sold the goods they themselves made, worked a trade independent from a small shop. They were not rich, but they lived in relative freedom. If that's a lower standard of living, sign me up. Dana. Well, yeah, if you start that early enough, Dana, if you start it when you're 23 and single. But what about people who are 43 and have a kid or two or three? Regarding the oil, I missed this a couple of days ago. Mike, I'm writing to let you know that we in Canada have problems with these oil companies spilling oil and wrecking the land, water, and air. However, anyone, which is everyone, who is behind the wheel of a combustion engine is guilty. Guilty of killing the organism on which we depend for our very lives, the Earth. Calgary-based Enbridge Company is responsible for this screw-up. A pipeline burst, spilling 3 million liters of oil into the Kalamazoo River in Michigan, and is now headed toward the Great Lakes. Dead fish, oil-covered birds are already starting to appear in large numbers. I don't know why people insist on driving, driving, driving. Our leaders don't force people to cease driving. However, the window of opportunity is now almost closed. The population of the Earth will be in peril, as humans have destroyed the very thin layer of atmosphere that protects us from UV radiation, are destroying forests, wildlife, and contaminating water with aromatic hydrocarbons. As a native Indian, I see this happening quickly and more rapidly each day, every place. This insanity has gone way beyond remedy. And sad as I am to say this, but the only thing to save this planet is the immediate elimination of the species known as Homo sapiens. How this is accomplished is really not important. But that World War III may actually have a good alternative to no life at all. May seem a good alternative to no life at all. Yow, folks are getting a little frantic, aren't we? Yeah, me too. We have an open line. The number is 877-996-2556. Mary is in Early, Iowa. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Mike. I would like to say, well, I'd like to say a lot of things, but Admiral Mullen has said that the WikiLeaks people have blood on their hands. I don't believe it's the WikiLeaks people who have blood on their hands. I think I know who has blood on their hands, and I hope they never sleep in a wink worrying about this. Then also I would like to say that Obama said we're leaving Iraq. Now he, of all people, should know that we're never leaving Iraq or Afghanistan or any other country we occupy. They say if you don't know his people, we're kind of ignorant. I hate to say that.
Well, now, wait, what? Why do you think... What leads you to believe that Obama will never pull the troops out of Iraq and or Pakistan?
Because he's one of them. Who do you think he hired for the banks? Geithner? I mean, all these people for the banks. Who did he put in charge of the military? The same people that Bush had in charge of the military. It makes one suspicious.
So you tend to believe, like a lot of people do, people who are Democrats or progressives, that that Obama is not what a lot of people thought he was?
I never thought he... I don't know why. It's like I'm kind of old. And it was like when I was young, girls were swooning and fainting over Frank Sinatra. I could not... bring myself to do this. I knew he had no interest in me. But anyway, I was a teacher, and one thing that is worrying me is they say if you don't know history, it's like you were born yesterday, like you just got off the boat, you know.
Sure.
Well, I can remember I lived in a small town, and there were two Negroes, we called them then, because we wouldn't call them that other word. And, well, my mother told me about this Negro lady that worked for this one family and how good she was. And I took that in. And then I had a third grade teacher, Miss McFadden, who explained what they had gone through and what the Negro people had gone through. And I can remember in high school, we had a teacher in biology that said that all the black people should go back to Africa. Was there anyone who disagreed? And I raised my hand, and he asked me why I disagreed. And you know, they never taught us history, that kind of history. I didn't know why I disagreed. I knew I felt sorry for them. And even in college, it was so boring. Dates, we were always good. And they had an old clock on the wall that about every two and a half minutes would make a big click. I could hardly wait for that click just to get through that class. But, and then I taught school. And I hate every child that came into my class could read and write and do arithmetic and spell. Just, it's so different now when I think of these poor children, and then they want to privatize the schools. I want every child to have a chance for a good education. There's nothing like it, and they're not going to. This country, I don't believe, will ever come back. I believe it's a depression, and they don't care about the people. They do not care, and I don't believe Barack Obama cares one whit. I think he likes his newfound friends. I hate to say that about him because I am not prejudiced in the least. But we are mean about the temple or the mosque they're going to build. I don't care if they build a mosque. We're just as mean, those religious writers. We're just as mean as we can be. And I don't want us to be mean anymore. And I don't know. I don't know. You better take it from there because I could say so much, but I don't know what we're going to do to stop this. It's got to be stopped. Well, but we can't stop it. I don't believe we can stop it.
Well, Mary, it's obvious that you have seen an awful lot in the course of your lifetime, and that's a good thing, although obviously you have witnessed an awful lot of things that were not necessarily good, but it certainly put your consciousness on a level that if we were all at your level, I think we would probably have a much better place. I really appreciate your calling in, Mary. Thank you so much. It's good to hear what you had to say.
And thank you for talking to me. And good night.
Good night, Mary. Take care.
Clever people wouldn't even try. If you want a place in the history books, then do something dumb before you die. Nobility are famous for no reason. Marie Antoinette enjoyed her cake. She caused a revolution when she would not share, and her husband lost his head for that mistake. The Hindenburg was a giant zeppelin. His makers made a minor oversight. Before they filled it up with explosive gas, they should have fixed the no-smoking light. History is made by stupid people. Clever people wouldn't even try. If you want a place in the history books, then do something dumb before you die. Tally-ho!
It is 10 before the hour. Jean, or Jeannie, writes, "Hi, Mike, I just heard the email from the person who will dance for rent. Makes me so sad. Oregon is a hard place to live anymore. We live in the poorest county, Coos. Ray of hope for people, though. I found out that Coos County is not only the poorest, but also the most generous. People here try to chip in for each other. It's not enough, but we try. My son, daughter-in-law, and grandson live in our backyard in a trailer right now, and I'm glad we have that. So many don't even have shelter. Our home is so small we don't have room inside. What are our children to do? We can hardly make ends meet. Sometimes we don't. What are the kids to do? No jobs? Nothing? I know people who live in cars and tents. We used to be middle-class folks, just regular. No more. We live in the new third-world country, USA. No God to help us. No nothing to help us. Blah. Jeannie." I like the blah. Arnold is in Durham, North Carolina. Hello, Arnold.
Hey, Mom. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing. I listen to Tracy.
Oh, no. Hey, Arnold.
Yeah?
We're getting every other syllable.
I'm sorry. That.
It must be the cell that you're in or something.
Yeah, I was listening to George.
I gotta put you on hold, Arnold. It's just, seriously, we're getting every other syllable. Dave is in Rantoul, Illinois. Is that right?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Mike?
All right, Dave, how are you? Hello? Okay. All right. What's happening? What's happening, you people? Just another typical night on the Malaya program. I guess drop phone calls and stuff. I haven't seen anything about the Michigan oil spill except that letter from the listener in Canada. I know people were being evacuated in Battle Creek, but I don't know. I have no idea. Has it been all fixed now? Just like the Gulf spill has been all fixed? The top kill or the top hat or the Fred Astaire or whatever the hell it is. What is it? The top kill now? How's that working out? Did the top kill work? No more oil in the Gulf? Everything's cool? Anybody say how long it's going to take to clean up the Gulf? 10 years? 20? 30? 50? Boy, you check out for 2 days, and it's like, oh, my God. I missed 8 news cycles. You think you have somebody on now whose call will go... all right, let's try this one. Ron in Phoenixville, PA.
Hey, Mike.
Hi, Ron.
Hey, it's been a while since I called. I'm Ron Lost in PA.
Oh, yeah. Hey, how are you? How are you doing?
Not bad. I'm one of the unemployed, and I just, you know, I've been listening in the shadows for a while. I think I had to kind of, like, step back after so many years of the pounding you received from, like, the stories of the Bush years are just too much for me, I think. And I just kind of, like, I became such a... kind of nasty, kind of hostile person to take a powder for a while. But, yeah, I just wanted to say something about, like, the rise of the working class that you were kind of, like, funning about earlier. And I know you're joking, but in some ways you kind of wonder, like, what's it going to take to finally, you know, have people recognize that their lives are being threatened?
No, I'm not joking at all.
But, you know, that's the way I take it. You know, I come from a union family. I'm a I'm an AFSCME member, and, you know, and I'll go out in my little green T-shirt, and I'll do my bit, you know. But they didn't stop me from getting laid off. But unfortunately, you know, I still don't have any bad feelings about, you know, my fellow working men and women. You know, I actually have. I've always had a certain amount of pride carrying around that card in my pocket, because, you know, I come from what it's like, you know. I was born in upstate New York, and I don't know if you know what it's like up there. I mean, it's like one guy said of it, you know, it never recovered from the last depression, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It just, you know, so, I mean, you know, there was something on Dateline a couple weeks ago about Ann Curry going down and somewhere, and they called it Appalachia, Ohio, and she followed these two people around. This one woman in particular just kind of, like, I just started weeping, you know. She had two kids. She was living with her brother and her husband in her father's and mother's house, both of whom were infirm. They had 14 people in a 4-bedroom house. This is in America, Appalachia, right now. And, you know, they had people sleeping in furniture. The mother and father slept outside in a tent during the winter. I mean, you know, I looked at that, and I'm like, rise of the working class? I'm like going, you know, like, if someone comes up and cold cocks you, you just don't stand there. I mean, you know, you you find out whether you're bleeding and you start swinging back. You know?
Well, you know, Ron, I think that once we Americans come to the realization that we can react, then we will react.
Yeah, because we are kind of scared, aren't we?
Well, we've been taught. I mean, two or three generations of us were taught to sit down, be quiet, your turn will come, don't push, stay in line, take a number, you know, all that garbage. And in learning all that, that process completely annihilated the basic belief that we don't have to take this anymore. Yeah, I got to go, Ron. Thanks, man. I'll see y'all tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy.